I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. All things political this hour, you always hear it Mondays at 1 o'clock. After 7 years of railing against the bill, the Republicans were not able to keep their promise to repeal and replace Obamacare. The president says, I honestly believe the Democrats will come to us and say, let's get together and get a great health care bill or plan. How big a failure was this? Does it make tax overhaul next on President Trump's agenda more politically complex, or will tax reform be easier because it's more in line with what the president wants to do? The president's son-in-law was today named head of a new team to fix the federal government using business strategies. In an interview with the Washington Post yesterday, he said the government should be run like a great American company. We'll ask our guest what she thinks about that. He has volunteered to speak before the Senate Intelligence Committee on possible Russian ties with the Trump campaign team. Reports today are of a previously unreported meeting between Kushner and the head of a Russian bank under sanctions. And there are now quite a few former campaign officials offering to testify, all but Mike Flynn. Stories are circulating that perhaps he has cut a deal with the FBI. What does our guest think about that? Can the House Intelligence Committee chair, you heard the news from NPR at the top of the hour, Kevin Nunes, continue as chair of this investigation into whether the president and his aides colluded with Russia? That after the story that he was on the White House grounds the day before he publicly announced that he saw information suggesting Donald Trump and his advisors may have been incidentally swept up in surveillance of other foreign nationals during the campaign. And what does this continuing story do for the president trying to get his agenda forward? Does it stall everything? Is it this big cloud hanging over the whole administration? Well, our guest this hour is Diana Furchot-Roth. She is a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, director of Economics 21 program, served on the transition team for President Donald Trump from 2003 to 2005. She was chief economist at the U.S. Department of Labor. She was chief of staff for President George W. Bush's Council of Economic Advisors, also worked for President George Herbert Walker Bush as deputy executive director of the White House Domestic Policy Council. She was an economist on the staff of President Reagan's Council of Economic Advisors, co-author of a number of books and author of others as well, including Disinherited, How Washington is Betraying America's Young, and author of Women's Figures, an Illustrated Guide to the Economic Progress of Women in America. We'll start with Friday's news, of course, concerning health care. Obamacare continuing as the law of the land. For at least the moment, here is what President Trump had to say.
Thank you very much. We were very close. It was a very, very tight margin. We had no Democrat support. We had no votes from the Democrats. They weren't going to give us a single vote, so it's a very difficult thing to do. I've been saying for the last year and a half that the best thing we can do, politically speaking, is let Obamacare explode. It is exploding right now.
Diana, hello. Thanks very much for being with us this hour.
It's great to be with you. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, our pleasure. Were you surprised this bill went down to defeat? I mean, it wasn't defeat. It wasn't even voted on, but it wasn't going to pass.
I really was surprised because it is an improvement over the current situation. It was a good step towards deregulating health insurance markets. It would have given the states more ability to help their individual residents. It would have moved away from the one state solution of the Affordable Care Act. So I was surprised that Republicans did not all get together behind Speaker Ryan and vote for it.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think that happened? Is there an intractability among Freedom House Republicans in the House? Where was the problem?
Well, all bills can be improved, and there were some members of the House who I think wanted the perfect to be the enemy of the good.
Mm-hmm.
And they were right. It could have been improved, but passing a bill from a party with a very wide range of views is not easy, and everybody has to be willing to give a little bit and also to know that incremental progress is better than no progress at all. So, but some people felt that they could not, in good conscience, vote for the bill the way it was.
Do you think that the president really called for this too early in his administration? And the second question is, do you think he worked hard enough to secure passage?
I think it's always up to Congress to call for when a vote should happen. So it was Speaker Ryan's decision to call for a vote at that point. And he found out that he didn't have the vote, so he did not call for the vote. But it's possible that further negotiation would have resulted in something everybody could agree with. But I am just an economist. I'm not a politician. If Speaker Ryan pulled the bill, he obviously felt that there was nothing more that could be done at this time.
The news today from Press Secretary Spicer's press conference is that the White House is now saying that they want to work with Democrats. What's your thought on this? Do they want to work with Democrats to fashion a new bill, to make changes, to make Obamacare better? What's up?
I really think that if it's hard to work with a group of Republicans, it will be even harder to find something that the Democrats will have in common with the Republicans. So it would be very hard for all the Democrats to join some House Republicans to approve something. So I think that that will be extraordinarily difficult also. I think probably the best solution is for Speaker Ryan to find a bill that everyone on his team can vote for and vote that through rather than relying on support from Democrats, which will be even harder to craft.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that he will be able to fashion such a bill, Diana?
Well, I can forecast the past, but the future I have more trouble with. I don't know if he will be able to fashion it, but I certainly hope that he will be, because premiums are increasing dramatically, 50%, 60% in some areas. The number of insurers are dropping out. Humana has said that it's going to drop out. Anthem has said that it's going to drop out. So this is leaving Americans with fewer choices of health insurance providers. And this is a real problem. We need to focus on the real problem, which is that Americans' premiums are going up and their choice is going down. And we need to see what we can do to fix it. We need to be focused on people rather than politics.
Mm-hmm. Some Democrats, notably Bernie Sanders, who's been calling for this for a long period of time, said, well, now, once again, let's look at the possibility of Medicare for all.
Yes, and that's used in many countries. There is single payer, such as in Canada, just to the north of us, and that's one possibility. On the other hand, waiting times for certain procedures are longer. Americans aren't used to that. There are some Canadians who come down to the United States and pay for procedures so that they can get them faster. There's a certain amount of medical tourism with people going abroad for procedures, which might not necessarily be as safe abroad as they are in the United States. America has the best healthcare system in the world in terms of survival rates from cancer, premature babies that can be kept alive longer, and we need to encourage our innovation rather than making it more government-centered. We need to give the private sector an opportunity to produce the products that people want to buy and compete and offer choice in terms of insurance companies as well as products. We need to give people the choice of a catastrophic health policy, a bare-bones policy where they can just buy insurance against major adverse events. So there's a lot we should be doing.
Mm-hmm. And what about making sure that we are able to insure most Americans? Should that be a priority?
It should definitely be a priority. We all believe in the social safety net. And the question is how best to do that. So for Americans who don't have food, we give them a debit card, also known as food stamps, and we tell them to go to the grocery store and buy their own. the same grocery stores that all other Americans can go to. We need to do the same for medical care. And that's one thing I liked about the House bill. It would have given low-income Americans a certificate for health insurance to purchase health insurance so they could go and purchase the same health insurance that you and I can buy. And this is better than putting them on a particular program such as Medicaid where the choice of doctors is limited. We need to ensure that just as with food stamps, where hungry people can go to a grocery store and choose the food anyone else can, that low-income individuals can have the same health care as anyone else can have and not be consigned to Medicaid or to Medicare or some other program where the doctors don't necessarily participate in the plans.
This now will, this bill is gone. I don't know if there's going to be an attempt to revive it or if the Trump administration will work with Democrats or what's going to happen with the future of this. Some are saying, although today he's saying he would like to work with Democrats, there have been some saying that what the Trump administration will now do, because he talks about how it's going to explode, Obamacare is going to explode, it's really bad, it's going to get worse over the next year.
Well, it's already exploding. I mean, you can talk to someone whose premium is $700 a month for coverage for one person and a baby. It's these costs are really out of control.
Mm-hmm. But he has also, there have been some who are saying that what he will do is undermine the current Affordable Care Act to make it completely worthless. Do you think that's in the cards, or will there be an honest attempt to work with everybody to come up with something that most people will say is a good thing?
Well, the president has already rolled back certain regulations, and he has talked about relaxing some of the penalties if insurance companies issue plans that are not compliant with the Affordable Care Act, some more bare-bones plans, for example, or plans that were issued for which companies had to get waivers before. So he's already indicated he might allow a broader choice of plans. And then the Internal Revenue Service has been instructed to collect individuals' tax forms, which are due in 2 or 3 weeks, without proof of health insurance. So if you don't have to write down your proof of health insurance on your tax form, there's no way the IRS can levy the penalty if you don't have health insurance. So already the system is getting whittled away. And I think the object should be to allow insurance companies to offer a broader choice of plans, because one reason that costs have gone up is that it's impossible to buy a plan on the exchange without maternity care, even if you don't want to have a baby, or without pediatric dental care, even if you don't have any children, or without drug coverage or medical health care, even if you want to just buy a simple plan. So we need to move towards simpler plans and more competition between insurance companies. And when you only have one insurance company in a county, as is the case in many counties in the United States, you're not going to get companies competing for your business. And the only way you get good service is by having companies compete for your business, just in any other area, such as restaurants, for example. If there were just one restaurant chain in a city, I can assure you it would not provide very good service.
Do you think that this issue, considering what happened and the fact that it really is an embarrassment for Republicans, because they've talked about repealing and replacing Obamacare for some 7 years, that's a long period of time. Do you think that this is, and I know you're not a politician, but you've worked with a lot of politicians and you are an economist. Do you think that this is really bad for Republicans, or will the administration be able to recover from this and move on to tax reform?
I think it's really bad for Republicans. I do hope that Republicans will be able to move on to this. But if Republicans cannot pass health care reform, which they've been talking about for 7 years, how can they pass tax reform, which is much more complicated and has so many different special interests? So it's going to be extremely hard to pass tax reform. Plus, what we've seen from the health care debacle is that a small group of congressmen can hold up the whole system. They are going to be emboldened when it comes to tax reform, and they are going to say you know, if it's not our way, we are not going to help out. We're not going to vote for it. So I think it's an extremely bad signal for passage of future legislation. No matter what people said about House Speaker John Boehner, at crucial times he kept the party together. And it's important that the party stay together if they are going to have legislative achievements. I think anyone would agree with me on that. It's much harder to pass tax reform than health care reform.
Mm. What if you made it simple as this can be, and just made your elements of tax reform cut corporate taxes, cut individual taxes? That's it.
The problem is that under current congressional rules, these have to be revenue neutral. So whereas other countries, such as Britain, can talk about cutting the corporate tax rate to 17% in 2020, as they are doing, as Prime Minister Theresa May is talking about doing when Brexit occurs, she doesn't have to worry about the Congressional Budget Office saying, ah, but it's not revenue neutral. You might be losing revenue. Whereas we do. So yes, it is simple to cut tax rates. What's difficult is to cut them in a revenue-neutral manner. And while Congress decides it's going to stick to revenue neutrality, which means raising some taxes as well as lowering others, sticking to static estimates rather than dynamic estimates, not accounting for behavioral changes, such as money that might flow in from abroad as we cut the tax rates, if they concentrate on revenue neutrality, they can't just cut taxes. They have to raise some others when they cut some of them. And that's what's the difficult part. It's not difficult making winners. It's difficult dealing with the losers.
We're going to welcome phone calls, as we always do for All Things Political and all of our shows. Diane Furchtgott-Roth, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, columnist for Market Watch, is our guest this hour. She served on the transition team for President Donald Trump. She was a chief economist in the U.S. Department of Labor during the George W. Bush administration. She's also worked as chief of staff of President George W. Bush's Council of Economic Advisers. She worked with George Herbert Walker Bush as well, and also with President Ronald Reagan and his Council of Economic Advisors. Our phone number, we're talking about the health care bill, didn't come up for a vote because there weren't enough votes. And so it was, as many have said, an embarrassment for the president and also for the Speaker of the House. Where do the Republicans go next? What does the Trump administration really want to accomplish? One member of the Freedom Caucus said that it's now time for the president to cut taxes, cut spending, and build the wall. And if he does that, the base will forever be in love with him and with the Republican leadership. Is that the way to go? What about the whole Russian investigation? We'll ask our guest about that. She is an economist and not a politician, but I'm sure she'll have something to say about those investigations and the news from NPR at the top of the hour about Nunes and Jared Kushner getting a plum job with, I'm not sure what the title is, but he is in charge of running government as a great American business would be run. Here's our phone number. One line is open. 800-486-8655 is the number. The email is talk@WPR.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network. All right, two phone calls. Kevin and Cramden, our first caller for you. Diana, hi, Kevin.
Hello.
Hello, Kevin. Go ahead.
Yeah, just a couple comments. A, I'm one of those evil poor people on Medicaid, and I thank goodness that this got shot down. I think it's great. I think there was just a poll. It was on your program, I believe, last week, that just in Wisconsin, 54% said they want to keep the ACA and improvement as opposed to your guest. And I agree with nothing she has to say. It's obvious where her heart belongs.
Why do you like Medicaid, Kevin? How has it helped you?
Well, I got my first 2 weeks ago. I got my first new pair of glasses in 8 years.
Mm.
Yeah, that was really nice. So what's wrong with Medicaid?
There are some people who are very, I know it's uneven, really, but there are people, you'll hear stories of people who have insurance, who didn't have insurance, whose lives have been saved under the Affordable Care Act, Diana.
Yes, and reforming the Affordable Care Act does not mean that just because certain aspects of it disappear, people are not going to have care. The view is that if certain programs go away, the states are not going to substitute for them. But the states in the bill were given funds to look after their own residents, which they can potentially do more efficiently and in a less expensive manner than a federal system. And everybody agrees that we need a safety net. I'm very, very glad, Kevin, that you are happy with Medicaid, but some people are not, and some people find that there are certain doctors that won't take Medicaid. And I'm really sorry it took you 8 years to get glasses. You should have been on a program where you could have got glasses before. It's not expensive getting a pair of eyeglasses, and states should make sure that residents who need them, who don't have enough money to get them, should be in programs where getting a pair of eyeglasses does not have to take 8 years. Mm.
Couldn't the care, though, be very uneven from state to state if you leave it up to states to decide what they're going to do with money in a block grant form?
Well, the view is always that if the federal government provides it, it's going to be great and everyone is going to get even care. But that's not always the case. And if you look at Indiana's program, Rhode Island's program, Indiana's program called the Healthy Indiana Plan actually leaves money in people's pockets if they don't spend all of it. And yet, if they need higher levels of care, an insurance program kicks in to make sure that they get that care. And the person who designed that program, C. Mavarna, is now head of Medicare and Medicaid services. So there are a lot of possibilities in the states for programs that do work very well. It's in every state's incentive to make sure that their residents are well looked after. And it shouldn't have taken Kevin 8 years to get their eyeglasses.
Yeah. What about Medicare? Do you think it works very well?
The Medicare Advantage programs have shown a lot of promise. They are very popular. And one thing about the Affordable Care Act was that it placed limits on these programs and took money away from Medicare, money that should have been left in the system. So encouraging programs such as Medicare Advantage would be very helpful in terms of giving seniors a choice of care and of different programs.
But on the whole, most people seem to be pretty happy with Medicare. That's what I've heard. Do you think that's true?
Some people are happy with Medicare, and Medicare, I think, for other people could be improved also. And I think building on these Medicare Advantage programs is one way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Why in the world is this whole thing so incredibly complicated and takes so long to fashion something that finds its way to Americans? It just goes on and on and on, Diana. We can't agree on it.
Yeah, no, this is it's an excellent question, and it started back in the 1940s when there were wage caps put on people's wages. Companies were told they were not allowed to raise workers' salaries after World War II. So what did they do? They gave them health insurance. Instead of raising their cash wages, they said, we will give you health insurance. This became so common that employer-provided health insurance took over the whole system, and no one wanted to buy health insurance on their own. They would just all get it through their employers. And this provided a lot of distortions to the market. You never hear anyone saying, I'm losing my job, I'm going to lose my auto insurance. Of course not. You don't get auto insurance through your employer. And you don't hear, oh my God, I'm losing my job, I'm going to lose my life insurance, or I'm going to lose my home insurance. No, because you get those through different companies. And health insurance is a completely different way of getting this insurance People are used to getting it through employers, so there isn't an active market for health insurance outside the employer-provided area, which is why it is in so much trouble.
Thanks very much, Kevin, for your call. Craig in Onalaska. Hi, Craig.
Hello.
Hi.
Earlier in the show, the guest spoke to the fact that there are a number of Canadians that come to the U.S. for medical care because of weights. And I'd like to point out that there's a large number of Americans that travel abroad for medical care because they can't afford the care here in the U.S. So I think by going to a single-payer program that we would greatly benefit from it. Right now we're paying a lot of money to insurance companies for their profits. And my second comment is I've spoken to quite a few Canadians, and they're all very happy with their insurance. Much, and they can't understand why we don't have something similar here in the U.S.
Diana.
Well, there are people who are happy with Canadian insurance, and again, there are people who are not. And the important thing is that people should have a choice of different services. There are other single-payer systems in other countries, such as France and England, where you can go outside the single-payer system and buy health care on the private market. That would undoubtedly be the kind of system that would be put in place in the United States if there were single-payer. So it would mean single-payer would be for some people, and if you were better off, like French or British people, you could go outside and kind of skip the line. And that, again, has a lot of inequality in the provision of health care services. We know how to run insurance markets. We run very good insurance markets in auto insurance, for example. We hear people advertising, companies such as Geico, call me for a 15-minute quote and I'll lower your rates. You never hear any insurance company saying, health insurance company saying, call me for a 15-minute quote and I will lower your
insurance
rate.
Right.
Why not? And it should be like that. There's no reason we cannot run health insurance markets, or we cannot let the private sector run health insurance markets as well as we can let them run auto insurance markets.
Thanks very much for the call. We'll go back to healthcare. I know many of you want to talk about it, but I want to move to a couple areas because it's all things political this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. You're a top-notch economist. What do you think of Jared Kushner being named today as head of a new team to fix the federal government by using business strategies, Diana?
Well, I was very happy to hear that he's going to be doing that and that he's going to be starting with the Veterans Administration. That is one area where veterans can really profit from a more business-oriented approach. So right now, they have to get care from VA hospitals, many of which are overwhelmed. Talk about long waiting lines. We make those veterans wait much too long for their care. They should be able to access private health insurance if the wait is over a certain length at a VA institution. And I very much hope that Jared Kushner is going to put these kinds of changes into place so that our veterans can get the same kind of care that anyone on Aetna or Blue Cross Blue Shield or Kaiser or United Healthcare would be getting.
What do you make of his now saying that he would testify and he will probably be called before the Senate Intelligence Committee? Evidently, there was some undisclosed meeting he had with a Russian banker who was the subject of sanctions. There have been a number of people who have ties to the Trump campaign and also to Russia who have now agreed to testify before the Senate Intelligence Committee, all except Mike Flynn. Some over the weekend said they think that he cut a deal with the FBI on this. A couple questions. One is, do you worry about this? And number two is, does it keep the Trump administration from being able to gather a lot of support because they're under this everlasting, it would appear, investigation?
I think the ties to Russia are a very complicated issue. It's very possibly a red herring. There are the members of the transition during the transition period, and I was a member of the transition, were told to go out and talk to many, many people. And they did this. And it turns out that some of these individuals to whom they were talking were being taped by U.S. intelligence services. The names of the Americans were not supposed to be revealed during this process. They were revealed. And as to Jared Kushner testifying before the Senate, when a Senate committee asks you to testify, you are really obligated to go. So it's not surprising that if they asked him to go, then he would be testifying. But I think it's a lot of it is just a tempest in a teapot. If you look at who said press the reset button with Russia, it was Hillary Clinton. If you look at who did not want to spend more money on the military, it was Hillary Clinton rather than Donald Trump. The Russians had no incentive to have Donald Trump elected instead of Hillary Clinton.
The FBI director said quite the opposite in his testimony before the House Intelligence Committee, didn't he?
Well, again, this is a question of politics. If you just looked at what has happened, it's not clear that the Russians would benefit from having General Mattis, from having Mike Pompeo, for having the strong defense team that President Trump has put in place.
So you're not worried about business ties, Trump connections to maybe shady people in Russia, his admiration of Vladimir Putin, all of these conversations with the Russian ambassador concerning sanctions, none of that is of concern to you?
None of that is of concern to me. When you are a businessman and you have dealings all over the world, many of the people you end up talking to have somewhat shady backgrounds, because in many parts of the world, that is how you become a leading businessman. Certain business practices that we have here are just not followed in other parts of the world. And what's important is that President Trump was elected. He is president. His job now is to govern. I am far more concerned about the fact that the health care bill did not pass than potential ties with Russians.
Mm-hmm. And one final question on this area, although our listeners may bring us back. Do you think Mike Flynn, who has not agreed to willingly come forward before the House or the Senate, cut a deal with the FBI?
I have no information about that. I have read Michael Flynn's book, Field of Fight, and it is a great book co-authored with Michael Ledeen. It came out last July, and it's about the problems that Iran is causing in the world with its funding of global terrorism. The fact that Mike Flynn is no longer head of the National Security Council is a great loss to the United States. I highly recommend his book to all your listeners. It's called Field of Fight.
But he lied. I mean, he lied about conversations he had with the Russian ambassador concerning sanctions. He lied. He lied. Right? That's not good, is it?
I think that it was conceivably misunderstood. One interpretation is that he told the Russian ambassador that he could not talk about sanctions, and that was interpreted as talking about sanctions. But I have no doubt that Michael Flynn is a great intellectual, a patriot, would have been great as national security director, and that he did nothing wrong. I am absolutely convinced he did nothing wrong.
We take more phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. And you're listening to All Things Political. Diana Furchgott-Roth, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, is our guest. She served on the transition team for President Donald Trump. She was chief economist of the U.S. Department of Labor and also chief of staff of President George W. Bush's Council of Economic Advisors. Worked for George Herbert Walker Bush as deputy executive director of the White House Domestic Policy Council. And she also worked for Ronald Reagan as president of his Council of Economic Advisors. She's the author of a number of books, including How Washington is Betraying America's Young. More phone calls from you in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. Let's go to Jack in Waukesha next. Hi, Jack.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My comment. I'm listening to your speaker talk about privatizing, making sure the private sector runs like health insurance, or are we going to run the government like business from private sector, and yet will it take health insurance? We've had private companies for so long, and yet there was no competitive market out there. They had no desire to do it. We have businesses like on Wall Street that opened up all these accounts for people without their knowledge. Why should we turn things over to areas that are not regulated enough? They're doing things that are illegal and not competitive.
Diana.
The case about businesses opening accounts without people's knowledge is Wells Fargo Bank.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the caller is right. There is no competitive market right now in health insurance because employers have taken over the whole business. And you basically get to have health insurance paid for out of pre-tax dollars. In other words, dollars that are not taxed, if you get it from your employer. But if you buy it on the private market, you have to pay for it out of after-tax dollars. So it costs basically twice as much. So there has been no private market for health insurance because it has cost so much more. That's why the idea of having tax credits up to $14,000 per family in the House Republican bill was such a good idea. It would level the playing field. It would enable people to buy health insurance on the private market out of advance refundable tax credits. And so that would help level the playing field. So there are two ways to level the playing field and to make health insurance more widely available to everyone. The first is not to have any tax credits for it at all. In other words, have everybody buy it out of after-tax dollars, so that if you get it through your employer, you have to pay tax on the benefit. Well, that is politically impossible right now. The other way is to have everybody buy it out of pre-tax dollars. So if you don't get it through your employer, you can get it through some kind of tax credit and deduct the amount. So it would be the same cost to you as if you got it from your employer. That is the direction that the House bill was moving towards, and that would encourage the development of a market in health insurance. And I agree it hasn't happened because of what happened in the 1940s, and companies were encouraged to give people health insurance instead of cash wages. But these things can be fixed. I don't think that we need to give up on an active health insurance market just yet. It is too early to give up on it.
Thanks, Jack, for the call. Randy in Madison. Hi, Randy.
Good afternoon, folks. For the guest, I don't know if you still keep in touch, but I do hope your former boss, George Bush the Elder, is doing well. And my question is that I would say no a week and a half ago that Devin Nunes should resign his position as chairman. And that's two scandals ago. It reminds me of Matt Damon's role in The Departed, where he reports to crime boss Jack Nicholson instead of to his top superiors. And so I'm just wondering, as a pretty consistent conservative, do you think that Nunes has the credibility or even the basic integrity to retain his title?
Well, he found information showing that some transition team members had been caught up in the wiretapping inadvertently, possibly when they were speaking to members of foreign governments, such as ambassadors. He made that knowledge public as soon as he found it out. If he hadn't made it public, he could very well have been accused of sitting on the information and hiding the information. And So I think this is he faced a difficult situation. And so, I don't think that he ought to resign.
You probably are not real keen on a continuation of investigations here if you think there was no wrongdoing. Do you think this whole thing should be investigated by the House and Senate or not even that?
This is a decision that the House and Senate have to make. As I said before, I'm just an economist. These questions are way above my pay grade. and it's up to them to decide what they want to do. But I hope that they will leave time for passing tax reform, for passing health care reform, for rolling back some of these regulations that have been slowing the economy, for allowing more energy development. So there are many, many other things that Congress needs to be focusing on in order for them to get reelected in 2 years.
What do you think President Trump could learn? You've worked with a number of presidents now. President Reagan, highly successful. President George Herbert Walker Bush, much admired. President George W. Bush, who was able to get legislation through. In terms of looking at the leadership styles of those three other presidents that you have worked for, would they have any advice for President Trump in terms of his getting his agenda passed?
I think they would probably say that he should focus on what he campaigned on and try to fulfill those promises to the American people. President Trump has appointed many, many qualified cabinet secretaries, such as my former boss, Secretary Elaine Chao, who is now Secretary of Transportation, and they are working to roll back regulations and try to make the country run more efficiently. And the presidents would probably tell President Trump that he should just stick to his agenda and not worry about the newspapers, because there is so much negative press, whatever you do. They would probably say, just don't read the newspapers, plow ahead with what you said you were going to do. Mm-hmm. That would be my advice, too.
Mm. The advice from the founder of the Tea Party Nation, and they seem to be holding a bit of clout right now, said that Trump needs to cut taxes, cut spending, and build the wall. If that happens, the base will be forever in love with him. What do you think of that?
Well, his budget has already proposed spending cuts, spending cuts, which is what he campaigned on, and tax reform has to come from Congress, so that has to start in the House Ways and Means Committee, then go to the Senate before it reaches his desk. And in terms of building the wall, he has already put out bids for contractors to start building a wall. So he seems to be moving ahead on all these different fronts.
Thanks, Randy, for your call. Let's go to a couple messages, emails. I'll give you a couple of them, and you can respond. Lee from Williams Bay asks, why can't the Senate, the House, and Trump offer universal health care for Americans? Another health care-related question. Paul writes, businesses were extremely upset over the exploding costs of health care insurance. The ACA was actually meant to be a middle ground political proposal, meeting also the needs of businesses to rein in costs, and it did so.
Yes, well, these are excellent, excellent points. Universal health care. We do have, I believe, universal health care in this country. It's just not single-payer universal health care. We have universal health care in that people can purchase health insurance if they don't have health insurance, but they are hit by a car or they fall down and break their leg, they are taken to emergency rooms, they are treated. They are sent a bill. If they can't pay that bill, then there are funds from these hospitals in order to treat them. So I would say Americans do have access to health care. They just don't always have access to insurance. Exploding health care, one reason that the costs of health care are exploding is that a very broad, generous plan was mandated with price bands that disfavored the young and favored the old. It used to be that insurance for older people cost five times as much as for younger people. The Affordable Care Act put those bands 3-1, so someone older couldn't be charged more than three times the premium for a younger person. Well, premiums for young people went up, and so, of course, they chose not to purchase health insurance. So the number of people covered on the exchanges now is about 12 million. When the Congressional Budget Office forecast it was going to be 24 million. So you cannot just systematically disfavor the young and expect them to stand up and pony up and buy this expensive health insurance. You need to make it attractive to everybody. If there's an attractive product, people are going to buy it. People aren't required to buy life insurance, but they buy it. They're not required to buy auto insurance above what is mandated by the state, but they buy it. And I'm not talking about an unregulated market. I'm talking about a market where there would be state regulators rather than a federal regulator. And the regulators in Wisconsin are quite competent enough to determine what health insurance policies should be available for sale to residents.
Let's go next to Kenneth in Shell Lake. Hi, Kenneth.
Hi, I just had a comment.
Kenneth, are you on a speakerphone?
Close. Kenneth, you're...
Hello?
Yeah, you need to... We'll come back to you, Kenneth. If you're on a speakerphone, we've just got too much noise in the background, so let's get you on another kind of phone because it was a wild sound. We'll go to Peter in the meantime in Racine. Hi, Peter.
Hey, good afternoon. Great show. There's many topics here going on. A couple of comments I'd like to say is nobody is above the law, and if there's a question of anything that we have, it should be researched. That should go for any of these Congress people that are working on anything. So with people getting upset that we're asking for information, I think that's only correct and the right thing to do for our government. The other aspect is if healthcare is so important to Congress, why don't they get off their own insurance and do the same thing everybody else has to do as far as buying their health care? And that goes along with deductions. If I had to buy health care and rely on my deductions to pay for it, I'm paying for that in the rears. Most people can't do that. They're living paycheck to paycheck. They need to pay for that, have that money at the time that they're purchasing their health care insurance. So having deductions or deductibles at the end of the program, to me, is not going to work for the majority of Americans. I'll take my answers off the air.
Thanks, Peter, for the call.
Peter, those are excellent questions, and the tax credit in the House bill would have been advanceable as well as refundable, so people would not have to buy it and then wait to be reimbursed. And it's an excellent question about Congress, because under the Affordable Care Act, Congress was supposed to be covered by the Affordable Care Act. Those people were supposed to be on the exchanges and not receive premium subsidies. Well, when it took effect, then congressional staffers found, that their cost of health insurance was going up. So there was a special waiver for Congress that enabled them to go on getting subsidies, even though they were not supposed to be getting the subsidies. And one thing that President Trump could do is take off this waiver for Congress so that Congress is subject also to the Affordable Care Act as it was intended in the beginning. There's nothing that would make Congress pass health insurance reform faster than if it had to live with the law that it passed.
Hmm. Well, we covered some territory, other things yet to be covered, but we'll do it in a later show. Diana, thank you very much for being with us this hour.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. I have really enjoyed speaking to you and also all the listeners.
Good. Glad you did. Diana Furchtgott-Roth, our guest for All Things Political. She's at the Manhattan Institute. She's director of the Economics 21 program, and she has served a number of presidents, transition team for President Donald Trump. She also was chief of staff for George W. Bush's Council of Economic Advisors. She worked with George Herbert Walker Bush as well, and also with Ronald Reagan, economist on the staff of President Reagan's Council on Economic Advisors, author of Disinherited, How Washington is Betraying America's Young. Thanks to Colleen Duvall for producing this hour, and to Colleen as well for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. Didn't get on the air? Send your messages to our Facebook page. We love to read them. It's the Kathleen Dunn Show. News from NPR is coming up, and then we're going to talk about great, brave dogs.